Stand by, Terry Saul Show. 5, roll tape. 4, cue Terry. 3, bring audio up. 2, stand by. 1, play intro.
Stay tuned for the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM, KSLM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM. I am your host and I'm so glad that you joined us this morning. Today's special guest, I've wanted to do this interview for quite a while and she finally has got some time to stick in her little head inside here and do an interview with us, is Faye DeMeyer. Wait, what is your full name? You have a bunch of names.
Yeah,
what
Faye, is it, Faye DeMeyer Anspa.
Anspa.
Yeah, Anspa.
Like on Anspa.
Anspa.
That's a German name?
It is a German name.
Really?
Yeah. My husband and I met when we were 16, well, actually 15. At McNary High School. We actually had one official date in 1969 as friends to the Who concert. And then we re-met at our high school reunion. It's been a great reunion. It's been great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Got married December 21st. The White Christmas 1950s wedding style at Oak Knoll Golf Course. It was fabulous.
Nice.
Yeah. And Tracy Weber, you know her. She,
the name sounds familiar.
She was in Disenchanted. She's
okay.
A Broadway singer. Anyway, she sang the White Christmas medley. So our entire wedding was singing I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas together.
Oh, perfect.
And instead of going out with rice thrown, we had snowball fight. I had those little puppy snowballs. It was awesome.
A snowball fight. All right, I'm going to go home and tell Patty. We're having a snowball fight.
That's right. I had 140 snowballs flinging around the room. And
real snowballs?
No, they were those. Have you seen those little puppy ones? They're little puppy cotton things. You can throw them and pelt people, but it doesn't hurt. Oh,
yeah.
It's hilarious. Kids love them. You can get them at Target. They're
$5
really? For 10, yeah. 10 of them.
And so you had a snowball fight.
Snowball fight.
So everybody's having this snowball fight.
Oh, we left, and 2 hours later, they're still snowball fighting. It was awesome. We got it on video. It's great.
That's awesome. What do you do here in town? I mean, you're all over the place.
I know
you were here at the radio station for a while. And, what do you do in town?
I started out my career in the mental health area out in Polk County. I worked with chronically mentally ill, alcohol and drug addicted, and people with disabilities. I was a case manager there. I went over to Marion County and worked there. And then I went to work in the prison system. And then
as
a reentry coordinator, I helped people who were to behave themselves out of what they behaved themselves into, get out to the community.
How tough was that?
It was tough, but it was good work because I saw people come into my... I teach at Schmeckida for 23 years, so I saw...
What do you do in your spare time?
You know...
Besides have a snowball fight?
Snowball fight. I actually... I dance.
Do you really?
Yeah, I love to dance. It's one of my all-time favorite things. But I would help people by getting them connected to mentors, getting them connected to alcohol and drug treatment. And I had 375 volunteers that came into the prison with me.
Really?
And they would come in once every 6 months, line up in tables, and let offenders know, look, the community's out here waiting for you. The excuse that nobody cares, it's a lie. Well, that's kind of what I'm transitioning to in my outside the institution culture. I work now with Connection 365. It's a therapeutic foster care organization, and I'm the development director and partial trainer to the staff and the mentors.
So what is 365? Connection 365, what is that?
You probably know it if people had... Years ago, we've been around for 31 years. It's a Christian Community Placement Center was its original name. We rebranded about 3 years ago to Connections 365. And what it is a huge wraparound kids who are what you would call the hardest to serve. So many of these children have had 10 to 20 placements. They maybe come out of an institution. Their parents, they may have seen so much trauma you can't even imagine. Some of them saw their parents arrested. Somebody saw their parents be shot. You know, some of them have seen domestic violence. Some of them have experienced sexual assault and physical assault. You know, so just different varying levels of trauma. So these youth come to us and they're a higher level of care called therapeutic foster care where you're using trauma-informed care with them. I'm a proctor parent also, so I do respite care.
What's a proctor parent?
That's these therapeutic foster parent.
Okay.
So you have to be trained differently than just, if you will, foster care. So I'm what is called Oregon Youth Authority trained, Department of Human Services, DHS, and also Marion County, and then this added feature of trauma informed care. So not only do I train proctor parents, I'm also a proctor parent. So I receive training
okay,
too.
Okay, so what do you do?
When a youth has been brought into your home, you parent them. I parent them like they're my own children.
You spoil them, don't you?
I do.
I know. I knew
them.
You would.
I do. Mm-hmm. But what I do is I want them to experience as much of a normal life that they can get. I grew up in foster care, Terry, from the time I was 10 years old on here in Salem, Oregon. And so I know the value of a good home. Mom and Dad Shire, my mama, Joanne, is still alive. She's be 90 this October.
Nice.
And she's amazing. My foster siblings are still very close to me, Melinda and Tom and Dan and Paula and Bob and Lois and
Joe. How many
and
do you have?
I have 4 siblings there. And then I have a sister, Grace, who's my biological sister, and my brother, Sonny. And we're here. And I raised my brother, Sonny, from the time he was 12 till okay. he graduated. So I have this belief in caring for people in a way that is different than most people, Terry. I don't believe that my past is my identity. I believe that my identity is what I behave myself as. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So I'm not a victim of my childhood. I'm not a victim of all the bad things that happened to me. I am an overcomer.
So you don't blame your childhood for actions that are happening now.
I've made bad mistakes that had nothing to
Haven't
do with my
all?
Parents, yeah. right? My goal is to learn from my mistakes. And if I want my life to look different, I will follow somebody's life who looks like I want my life to look. Do what they do. I learned that at an early age. And so it's a little bit hard right now. We're facing this crisis with youth who, if something goes wrong, they melt like a cheap sheet, you know, and we hear this.
Why is that?
I think we're giving them the identity of a past victim. We're living in what is called present past, Terry, not present future. So if you live in present past, you get what you practice. You're like you're driving a car, and the whole time you're driving, you're looking in the rearview mirror. Well, there's a lot of stuff to hit out front. That's why the windshield's bigger than the rearview mirror
right,
on purpose, right? But our culture is so victim overloaded. Plus, we constantly see trauma on TV every single day. There's a school shooting, how many million times are we hearing about it? Really one shooting, but we heard about it for 5 weeks. There's even this coronavirus thing. More people are dying of the regular flu than coronavirus. Come on, people. You know, 16,000 people died last year in the United States of the flu. And, you know, so those are things that people don't look at all the evidence. They want to go with their emotional appeal to logic. And we got to look at evidence. So for me, as I see my life unfolding, I see what can I do today that's going to make an impact in the future, right? It's not really just about me. It's about all of us, right? So when I go to work at Connections, I think, okay, there's a youth. When I walk into the center and I see a youth, first thing I'm going to go is, hey, what's up? How's it going? Because they're just like you and me. They want acknowledgement, right? When they're in my home, it's not you're a youth who's troubled. You're a youth who needs somebody to see you. Not see your trouble, but to see you. And man, when you're acknowledged and seen, cool things happen.
How do you go home after spending a day there and not just put your head in the pillow and cry your heart out?
Because I see the fruit. You know, I see the fruit of not only my own life, but of the youth. When I see foster parents actually adopting a child who is 18 as a forever child, that's the kind of homes we have.
Does that happen often?
We have one home that has a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old,
really?
And their goal is to adopt them both. We had a 15-year-old girl just adopted out of our system right into a home with just a forever family. I have a forever foster family, so I feel completely adopted, you know, and they kept me by choice. And you know me. I mean, that was a tough job, right?
Well, I wasn't going to say so, but yeah.
Yeah. And I'm hyperactive. I grew up very hyperactive, not literate until much later in my growing up. And so it was a little bit of a test, but I was a compliant child for the most part. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I think my last real trauma was when I was 13 and I got picked up shoplifting. And I decided from that point on, if I'm going to be in a courtroom, it's going to be in the place of honor.
Right. Can I ask you a little bit? You said you were foster.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you a little bit about that?
Yeah,
did you ever meet your biological parents? Do you know
who
they are?
Actually, when I was 20, I took my first son, Jay, with me and met my mom, found my mom.
How
and
was
met
that?
Her. I wanted her to know that I was thanking her for leaving, and she was released from the burden. Now I'm a mom. I know what it would be like to leave my child, right? So I'm like, you know what? You did the best you could. When you left, it took more courage to leave and let somebody do it who could do it when you knew you couldn't.
How old were you when she left?
I was 10.
So you had 10 years with her then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How tough was that?
Honestly, they were alcoholics, and they did not know what they were doing, and my dad beat my mom, and my mom...
You would see that?
Oh. There was one time that he took a hydraulic jack and hit her in the face so hard
that
you could hardly recognize her face. And this was right after their daughter, my sister, 5 years old, was ran over and killed by a car. And their assault and battery on each other was just taking out all that pain, drinking and just being violent to each other. They were violent to each other. And so I know there's residue from that, and the trauma is part of me, but I know the healing power of Jesus. And I know how to connect and love and attach to people. And I can take criticism, and I can stand up for myself today. And there's just so much that I just feel blessed about.
I don't want to dwell on this, but I'm fascinated by this. Mm-hmm. But when you decided to take your son to meet your biological mother, you said you were 20?
I was 20.
Okay, so 10 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And during that 10-year period, did you ever think about what she doing? Is she still alive? Do I want to see her? What made you decide at 20?
Probably because I had a child, honestly, is why. I knew it would heal me, and I knew it would heal her. I knew forgiveness was really the pathway for both of us. She died 2 years later, and she was very ill when I saw her. And I did go to her funeral, but I didn't get to go just before she died to say goodbye. It felt like that too. But we kept in contact from the time I was 20 until she passed. We kept in contact. And back then it wasn't, you know, FaceTime or anything, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
How about your biological father?
I found out in 2001 that he passed away 2 years after her. And the way I found out is I was taking a former inmate over to a family unity meeting out in Dallas. And I saw this man and I said, who is that? And they said, it's Larry Graber. I said, could you have him come out here? He was my caseworker at 10 years old. He
really?
Came out, older man, yeah. And he came out and he goes, Faye Pollard. He goes, I got to ask you something. And I go, what? And he goes, what were you thinking when we gave you back to your parents? Because there was a season when they lost us the first time when I was 9. We went back for 6 months to my parents. So we were in foster care for 6 months, then went back for 6 months.
Why did you have to go back?
Well, they want to reunite. They want to reunite with the parents, right? And then I came home at 10 years old, and my mom and dad were gone. It was a sad blessing, if that makes sense, because on the one hand, I knew I'd never see him again. On the other hand, I was kind of glad, because I'm a practical kind of kid.
Right.
I grieved when I got pregnant, and here's what I grieved. I didn't know how to parent. And so this is my prayer to the Father at the time. I said, God, I don't know how to parent. I had this short stint with the Shires, and they were great parents, and that was some good evidence. I'm going to need help. And you know what God told me about parenting? You treat a child the way you'd want to be treated.
Really?
And I'm telling you, it was golden after that. I loved momming. I loved it. I had 3 children. I have 2 boys and a girl. I now have 2 grandchildren.
Aren't they the best?
Oh, they're so... I tell my daughter all the time, I so wished I'd have had your kids first.
I told my son asked me the other day, he goes, Dad, why do you spoil my kids more than you ever spoiled us? I said, well, I like your kids.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, son, I never
that's
liked right. you, but I like the kids.
Well, it's hard when you're young and you don't know, you know, and I did choose to have kids. I got married at 18. I chose to have a child. I never thought I would, to be honest with you.
Really?
I didn't, because I saw how childing and parenting was hard. So I didn't know if I'd ever do it. But Proctor Parents and Connections 365 are a way to give back. You know, I got good foster parenting and I want to give that back. So now I just do respite care. So I do weekend care with kids. Because I'm doing the development director position, right. And that's really full-time.
So you don't have any foster children in your house right now?
Not right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you think you ever will again?
Yeah, I do it on the weekends.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We need to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest. And you're listening to The Terry Saul Show on 104.3 FM at 1220 AM. KSLM, today's show being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler and the Lule Group. We're talking Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and my good friend Teresa Lule, State Farm Insurance. Back in just a minute. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting warmed up.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We're back in 5, 4, Q Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
Welcome back to the Terry Saul Weekend Show. Today, our special guest is Faye DeMeyer. Is it DeMeyer? Or it is DeMeyer, right?
DeMeyer Onspa.
Mm-hmm. The Onspa, I'm going to mess up every time.
I know,
time.
It's okay.
You know what my real last name is?
What?
It's not Saul.
What is it?
You're getting close.
Saltissimo.
No.
No. Salissimo?
No.
Salamani.
Oh, you're getting close.
Salamisky.
No, now you're. It's Saltalamacchia. Saltalamacchia.
S-A-A?
S-A-L. T-A-L-A-M-A-C-H.
Did you have a son named Ryan?
Yes, I do.
He was in my class. He was in my class.
Oh,
I love
no.
this boy.
Well, that makes one of us.
You would ask him about, he would have been in there when, it would be Faye DeMeyer.
He's the paramedic.
Yeah.
Up in Portland.
Yeah, he's an amazing kid.
He's a hell of a paramedic up in Portland.
He's an amazing kid. He's at TVC, right?
I don't
Tualatin Valley?
No, he's up at... Is it AMF?
Oh, he's
Portland?
At AMF. Okay. Yeah. He's full paramedic because he was in police and fire when I... Yeah.
Okay. No, he's full-blown paramedic.
Very cool.
And you know what's really weird, Faye, is here is a kid. First of all, I'm so damn proud of him. I'm so proud of what he's done.
Yeah.
Because he did it on his own. Here's a kid that I couldn't get to clean his room as a child. Now he's saving lives on a daily basis.
That's awesome.
I did a ride-along with him just to watch him in action. And I thought, who is this that I'm watching?
Isn't it great?
My son. And when they wheel the patient into the hospital waiting room there, or the emergency room, and to hear him communicate back and forth with these doctors. And I just looked at him and I said, "You're just showing off in front of Dad." And he goes, "No, I'm not. Go sit in the hall, Dad."
That's awesome.
But he's an incredible.
He's really a good kid. You did good, Dad.
And he's a wonderful daddy. He's happily married, and he's got two beautiful children that have stolen my heart.
Oh, I know. Here. I love it.
I'll mention that to him.
That's cool.
I want to talk about something that I know you're involved with as well as, and it seems to be a big problem here in, not only in our area, but now I'm noticing it's a problem around the country, is the homeless situation. You can't drive downtown and see these homeless camps. Salem Center, for instance, on the side of Rite Aid there. I mean, they've got the entire block.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. Patty told me a couple of weeks ago, I want to go buy a pair of shoes at Kohl's. And it was an evening about 7:30, 8 o'clock. I said, nah, I don't want you going down there by yourself because I'm just fearful for you. She says, all right, come with me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm fearful for me too.
Yeah.
But we went down there and... Mm-hmm. You know, I feel for him. I did an interview with a homeless gentleman a few months ago. His name was Oz. And I asked him to tell me his story.
Mm-hmm.
And he came home at 10 years old, and his family had moved out.
That's
and
my
he
story,
did, he
too.
He came home from school.
That's what me,
and
too.
His stuff was on the porch. And I says, where was everybody? He goes, I don't know.
Yeah.
And he says, and it wasn't until he's 40 now, he found his mom about 5 years ago. But all this time, he had lived on his own and lived with whatever couch he can find.
Right.
He was telling me about the homeless life. And to me, my feeling is, in the homeless is that it's either a unfortunate circumstances that you become homeless, or you're homeless because you're hiding.
Yeah.
And there's no perfect place to hide than being on the street.
That's right, where you have no address and no connection.
I feel when I drive down the street, I see them, especially when they're panhandling. And Patty and I get into our battles over this because I want to say something. And she keeps telling me, don't roll down your window, shut your mouth. And the reason why I want to say something is I took a gentleman who was panhandling into Kentucky Fried Chicken. I go, come on, I'm not going to give you money, but I'll buy you lunch. And I bought him lunch, and he got his lunch, and he went and sat at the other end of the restaurant. And I walked over to him. I said, I'm buying you lunch. Least you could do is sit with me. And he just said, well, I didn't think you'd want to. And I go, okay. So we talked, and he was telling me his story. And then I saw another gentleman, a younger kid, panhandling on the corner of Commercial and Kubler. And he had the sign there that says, you know, we'll work for food and blah, blah, blah. And I rolled down my window, and I said, hey, Sherry's restaurant right there has a sign. They're looking for a dishwasher. Help wanted right now. And he looked at me and told me to F off and said, mind my own business. He wasn't interested in working as a dishwasher. And I thought, okay, so you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know
what you're facing.
You know,
yeah,
the ones that say veterans tug at my heart.
Me too.
Tug. But are they really veterans or not? So the homeless problem is a big problem in our area, but it's nationwide.
So, Terry, if I tell you that I'm homeless, does that mean that I'm homeless?
No, it doesn't mean you're homeless.
If I hold a sign up that says I'm homeless, does that mean I'm homeless?
No.
Yeah. So houselessness, some say, is a choice. Some say it's, as you said, unfortunate. What I'm concerned about is the lawlessness allowed under the umbrella of houselessness. There's a huge amount of lack of civility that's being allowed, and we're actually teaching our homeless how to treat our city, how to train our children, what's appropriate or not to act. And people think I mean for saying that, but I literally lived in a car for the first 10 years of my life, okay? The only reason I was in a house that came home from school is because we had been put in foster care and CSD was monitoring my parents. That's the only reason we had a house at the time I came home and they were gone, okay? So the rest of the time was living in a car or bunking on it, somebody's couch or whatever for all those years. So I know what it's like to actually be homeless. And when we were homeless, Terry, we worked. We weren't ever homeless and no work. In fact, we had a rule in our homeless world. If you don't work, you don't eat. And it didn't matter what your abilities were, okay? So I'm a fetal alcohol affected kid, attention deficit, hyperactive, okay? Literally abandoned child. Have absolutely every marker for addiction, 98% chance to be alcoholic addict, shouldn't be educated, okay? I know that deficit, those barriers. The question is, will the barriers be part of who you are and your identity? My thought is, and that's what I want to talk to you about today, how can we bring people up to their highest instead of label them homeless and traumatized so that their victimhood is what shines instead of their overcoming part that shines? That's what I want to get
at. Okay, so you threw out that question. Let me ask you, how do you do that?
Well, part of it is you have to bring people into a lighted area where they're not laying in their own feces and their own urine, because right now it's going to be really hard to talk to them down there. It's dark, it's wet, it's dank, it's cold. Right now it's 27 degrees for the next few days outside.
And you're sleeping on concrete.
Nothing makes me angrier than to be cold. I'll be honest with you,
right,
okay?
Right.
Even to this day, because when we lived in cars, they weren't carpeted like they are now. They had that rubber mat.
Right, I remember
and
that, yeah.
My bedroom was the side with the pedals, you know, where it said brake. I still hate the smell of rubber because that was in my nose. I hate fans because anytime the car got turned on, you had the fan coming right on you. I hate the sound of fans. There's a lot of trauma in my life. And how do you do it? Number one, you have to have a support group. And one of the things that I'm proposing that we'll talk about in our next segment is a way to get that to happen.
Okay. We're just starting into this conversation because there's a lot more that I want to talk to you about on this thing, but we do need to take a quick break. And you're listening to the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM, AM, and FM. We will be back in just a minute. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Terry Saul Show on KSLM, AM, and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM, AM, and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We're back in 5, 4, cue Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
We are back. This is The Terry Saul Weekend Show, Salem's original radio station, KSLM, AM, and FM. I am your host, and today we're talking with, I'm going to get this right, don't say me, don't tell me, Faye DeMeyer Onspa.
Yeah, awesome, epic.
I'm telling you, Miss Onspa.
Yeah, that's right.
Before we took a break there, we were talking a little bit about something that's really tugs at my heart, as well as I'm sure yours too, the homeless situation here. Do you know that I'm a Denver, Colorado boy, and we go back there quite often. And when we were back there this last time, it was in October, we were driving around, and I remember my niece who lives back there, I asked her, I says, where are the homeless camps and the panhandlers? So she says, they're not allowed in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean they're not allowed? How do you not allow? She goes, no, it's illegal in Denver.
Yep.
And we drove around Denver, and there was nothing. Here, if you want to give a dollar to everyone you see, you better take at least a $20 bill with you,
mm-hmm.
because they're on every corner.
Yeah.
You're involved with that. Again, explain how.
Yeah. Well, about 6 months ago, a gentleman reminded me that we still have a facility here called Hillcrest out on Reed Road, Strong Road, actually, off Reed, and that it has 207,000 square foot of building space and a total of 44.6 acres, 20 acres of just bare land that could be used to shelter people who are houseless.
And was that the old Fairview?
It's the old Hillcrest.
Okay.
Hillcrest School for Girls, remember?
Okay. Okay.
So it has a possibility for what is called a dry shelter, which means people would be clean and sober, and a wet shelter. So if somebody came in just to shelter for the night and they were drunk or high, they could still sleep,
okay. But
then they'd have to leave in the morning because they can't use there, right? But the dry part could be there for people who want their lives to improve. So I worked together with the team and we formed Hopecrest Foundation. Hopecrest Foundation is a foundation of about 6 or 8 people that are excited about having an upgrade in what we're seeing downtown. There is a Marion County initiative. If you go online and look at the Marion County Homeless Initiative, right now it's led by people like Kathy Clark, Mayor Clark of Kaiser, Mayor Bennett, different people like that. Jimmy Jones is on it. He is with the Arches. You've probably seen the Arches downtown.
Right, yeah.
He himself makes $300,000 a year as a director of Arches. And he has been in business there for about 3 years. And as director, I think about the last year and a half. And what's important about that is I don't see that agency yet has improved our city as much as I've seen the city deteriorate. So if we have more money, now, just so you know, there are several million dollars that go into the coffers for the Community Action Agency. I don't know how many specific million dollars that Mr. Jones is in charge of, but I do know that his personal salary is $300,000 a year. Therefore, there's quite a bit of money
out
there.
High, doesn't it?
You know, he's, quote, the expert. But to me, the expert would have these people off the streets by now. In 3 years' time, you wouldn't have more people on the street. You'd have less. I went and cut hair on February 1st at the Homeless Connection. This particular expert was responsible for having a connection at a local church. And it was vendors that helped people. Okay, that's what it was. I was cutting hair. I cut 15 people's hair from the time 8:30 in the morning until 2. Okay, 15 people. Of the 15, zero were from Oregon. Zero.
Really?
Yeah. Were you going to stay here? No, we're just passing by. So there's a lot of people in transit because we're one of the warmer, most gentler climates compared to places. Here are the places they were from. Colorado was one. Massachusetts, Reno, Las Vegas. Just trying to remember the states just right off. And I just spoke to each one of them. You know, when you're cutting someone's hair, it's pretty personal, right?
Sure, sure.
So, you know, I wanted them to have what they wanted for a cut. And so we did the hair talk and then, you know, just talk to them. Hey, what's going on? How you doing? You know, what's your life like? You know, obviously, one person said, I'm not even homeless. I just heard there were free haircuts down here.
See, that's the part that irritates me because
uh-huh.
that you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know. When you see them on the corner, you don't know.
Yeah. But see, I'd rather help a working person than a person who won't work. I'm just telling you right now, if a person can work, they have hands and feet and eyes and all that, and they can do even push a little button, whatever level of work they can do, when they help themselves, I want to help them more. And we're not fostering that anymore. We're fostering literal nothing, okay? I sat with a lady named Char, her last name Char, she self-identified, on CCTV last Friday. The comment came out that she was disabled, she could not lift over 5 pounds, blah, blah, blah. And in our conversation, I said, so do you live on the street? She goes, yeah. And I go, so you're on the pavement? And she goes, yeah. And I go, so you have to lift yourself up off that pavement every day, right? Yeah.
Oh.
I go, do you have a cart? Do you have to push around a cart? Oh, yeah. I said, man, all your stuff's in that cart? Yeah. How much do you think that weighs? And she's like, a lot. And I go, do you think it weighs 100? Oh, more than that. So you have to push a cart and put your stuff in and out of that cart, right? Yourself? All by yourself? Yes. I said, then you can lift more than 5 pounds. A lot of times we get told that we're disabled and we live as disabled. And when you practice living as disabled, it's not much of a life. And it's ruining people's lives, okay? Later, she said, well, I have bad days. I don't know about you, Terry, but I'm nearly 66 years old. I have bad days too. I have days I don't want to go to work. I have days that I don't want to get up. But I don't have a
Those
choice.
Those are called rollover days.
Yeah.
You just want to roll right back over
right.
and go back to sleep.
Right. But yeah. I have to work because I have bills to pay. And they're my obligations. And my food and my shelter and my insurance and all the things it takes to cut out a week are my job. It's not the job of someone else to take care of me. So when I broke my shoulder last year, this bone came right off the arm there. I was single. I wasn't even married or even dating anyone. anyone. And I literally went through that without missing any work because I had to work. I was brand new on my job and I didn't have a choice. Sometimes we have to do the hard things. And I don't think we're expecting that out of people. Somebody comes in and tells you they've been traumatized, they've had a bad luck or whatever it is. And we just go, oh, okay, then you shouldn't have to do anything. I think that is a lie that's perpetuated. We're not teaching people to overcome, Terry. We're teaching people to be and remain victim. And as long as they see themselves that way, they're going to self-identify. And that's what we're getting, what we practice. When you have no purpose, then alcohol and drug use is your option. When there's no purpose to your life, you're going to use. Now, not everyone on the street's using, okay? Some people aren't using drugs, but they're using people, places, and things. The big problem...
Wait. Say that again.
People, places, and things.
Okay, explain
when
that.
When you're using other people to do for you what you could do for yourself, okay. You're using.
Okay.
When I do for somebody else what they could otherwise do for themselves, I'm using. I'm using them to get my needs met. When I hand somebody something that they could actually do for themselves and I don't give them a hand up, but I give them a handout, makes me feel good, but it really doesn't help them. Short-term help, long-term delay, long-term push down. Basically, I'm saying, you can't do it, baby. I'm going to do it for you. Mm. And what's that message I'm giving over and over again then? You can't do it. So Hope Crest was born out of the idea of giving people a house, which people claim they're houseless, give them shelter, temporary shelter, get them showered, have a bathroom, give them showered bathroom. And then from that standpoint, now you can start having that conversation with them. You have people coming into a cafeteria and eating instead of out on the street, instead of that garbage there, you actually have garbage service. Now, people say, well, Faye, you'd have to get them out there. We're paying $15,000 to $30,000 every time we clean up those streets. That money could be used for transportation. We are now proposing tonight, I don't know if you know that, but Monday night, there is going to be a city council meeting that will be called, have them sleeping in the parkade, the Marion Parkade. In the parking lot, okay? And the reason is then they wouldn't get rained on. But it's still 27 degrees. We have a building out here. You would rather put people in a parking garage for a chance they don't get up the next day and get hit by a car? Are you serious? Then go into a building that is safe out there. And they're going to pay roughly $75,000 a month for that ability. $75,000. Would that do a lot of transportation back and forth to Hope Crest? You bet it would. Would it provide food and other things? You bet.
So that was my next question, is this facility you're talking mm-hmm. about is currently unoccupied right
unoccupied.
Now? Unoccupied. Okay.
The state could donate it. It's already paid for. It was bought in 1913.
All right, where are the funds going to come to operate it?
The same funds that are coming to operate Northwest Human Services. They're $32 million in a biennium. That's a butt ton load of money.
Yeah.
$32 million. You know what they're asking for the building? $4 million.
Okay.
You know what it'd take to operate it annually? $3 million. And that's a good...
So why is it not happening?
Because there's a lot of political clout in the industry of homelessness, okay? If people get off the street, how are the feds going to want to fund that? If the people get healthy, how? It's very similar to the big pharma. It's an industry, Terry. It's an industry that if people get well, if people start working again, if people start caring about themselves, then we won't be able to write grants and get big money for it. And we can actually have our name on a building that says, you put the big name here in Salem on that building and says, oh yeah, I sheltered 10 people over here. Oh yeah, I sheltered 10 people over here. I have two people right now that have offered up $400,000, one at $300,000, the other one at $100,000, who says, Faye, I will right now get let's get some property, let's build it right now. They're willing to do it. So why not take that $400,000 to a building that's already built? I could run that place for the rest of the winter on $400,000.
What type of a staff would you have to have? You can't just have any
the same kind
John
of,
and Mary come in there and run it for you.
They're already getting paid. The county, the state, and these nonprofits that are getting our tax dollars are already getting paid to case manage, to do medication management, to do all of that. Just send them over to help. But there's the housing is what I'm saying.
Right,
they're
right.
saying we don't have enough places to house them. That is, can I say BS?
You just did.
Yeah, it is BS. We have a place. It's heated at 55 freaking degrees right now. Your tax dollars have been paying it for over 2.5 years. And it's sitting empty, 207,000 square feet, two commercial kitchens, a dormitory for 480 people, a gymnasium, a swimming pool, I mean, outdoor activities, places that, classrooms, to beat the band. So people could come in and teach classes. C-Tech could be involved. So many things could be involved, Terry. But guess what? That would solve the problem. We don't want to solve the problem. We want to have an industry called homelessness. People say, Faye, you're dividing. You're being divisive. No, I'm trying to coalesce around this idea of co-locating services in one place so the hand knows what the foot is doing.
Who is the roadblock?
Who? It's right now, the city, Mayor Bennett. I'm calling him out. God bless you, Mayor, because I know you care about the city, but it's hard to think about caring about the city when you make a no-tent camping, so now they're unsheltered, and then you make a half-sit-and-lie, Ms. Kaser, because you don't want to interrupt anybody. Short-term decisions matter for long-term. If you make a quick fix and you don't think of the long-term implications, it's kind of like our politicians who only think past their four-year term. We got to think longer than the term.
All right. Fortunately, we can go on for a long time about this, but there's something else I want to talk to you about. You're involved with a program called Kicking Cancer's Backside. We need to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting warmed up. We'll be back in just a minute with our guest, Faye DeMeyer, on the spot.
Very good.
I'm
going to
get this thing
here.
Awesome. All right. Back in a moment.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We are back with our final few minutes of today's show. Our guest has been Faye DeMeyer on Spa. I got it down
You're awesome.
Before we took a break, we were talking about the homeless situation there. And one question I want to ask you is, the businesses downtown have got to be affected. Rite Aid and TJ Maxx down there by the Salem Center, they have got to be affected by the camps all around there. Do you know how are they doing?
Rite Aid and TJ Maxx are right now suing the city.
Are they really?
Yeah, they are. This is going to cost the taxpayers umpteen dollars.
So say you and I are going to pay that.
We're going to pay that bill. The other one is Nordstrom. He's not yet suing, but he has a good right to sue because he's had that building up for sale. He can't sell it because people literally come there and then they stay in the car and just drive away and say, no, we're not touching this. People who wanted to buy the building flew in here to look at the building and drove off. That is a testament to our, and this is where I call Mayor Bennett out. I love Mayor Bennett, just so you know. He's a great guy, but you know what? He's wrong in this one thing. He can be a great guy and still be wrong.
Right.
And that's how this is working. And part of the reason that people don't listen sometimes is they make assumptions about people that because you've never been in politics or whatever, they think certain things. They have no idea that you know how to handle this from the inside out, okay? They could waive the code fees. They could, the zoning fee, the zoning is already public health, which is what this is, a public health issue, and they could fix the water thing. Those are the three things that they've pulled up for objections. Everything else is not an objection except for the politics of the matter, which means the coalition between the Jimmy Jones, the Arches, the whole thing like that, okay? I've been told to stand down. I've been told by several people to stand down. I'm not standing down because I'm standing up for people who are outside, and I'm standing up for our city businesses. And I've been asked to stand up by both the homeless and by businesses. And you know what? I'm not standing down.
Good for you. Good for you.
So that's enough.
I don't want to change the subject, but I want to cover this before we have. We only have about 7 minutes left to go here. Kicking Cancer's Backside. I know you're involved with that, as well as I've lost, like I said before, I lost a father, a mother, and a brother to cancer. I lost a kidney to cancer. You've had a bout with cancer. Why are you involved in Kicking Cancer's Backside? And tell me a little bit about this program.
Well, about 2.5 years ago, about two now, Baron Robinson came to me at Chamber and said, hey, I hear I need to talk to you. You have a lot of influence in the city, blah, blah. And he shared his story with me. And he was weeping when he did it. And from that point on, I've been involved in the movement. The movement is simply this. We're no longer going to tolerate the lies that the medical system has that there's no cure. Number one, we know there are cures for cancer. Okay. We know that O3, adding oxygen to the body, kills cancer. Because under oxygen, high amounts of oxygen, cancer cannot survive. It kills it, literally. So we know that. We also know that many of the drugs that people use to, quote, stave off cancer are more deadly than the cancer itself, okay? Thank goodness for modern medicine. There's some things to be said. We're both alive because of a surgery to take cancer out. Yay. But the drugs, not so much. I didn't take chemo and I didn't take radiation because I read the research and I said I won't survive if I do those things. And so they said, but you have to. We always do that. I said, yeah, you do a lot of other things that kill people too, but but I'm not about it. So no. And so you have to take charge of your own.
So what did you do?
How did you beat it? I had my surgery and I said, be radical with the surgery. Take it out like you did.
Right.
You know, be radical. And they did. And so I'm 8 years now without.
Good for you.
Yeah. And I'm glad. The people that did the radiation and the chemo who had my kind of cancer, they're no longer with us. Okay. So, and they died a pretty horrific death. So that was a real big deal to me. Let me tell you about kicking cancer in the donkey. We call it kicking cancer in the donkey. We premise on five things. One, eating well, eating good and healthy, colorful foods. Okay. Eating
broccoli,
organic or whatever as you can. anything that's yellow and bright green and bright red and bright blue, dark blue, I should say, and purple, those are the kinds of things to eat. If you're going to eat meat, eat organic meat, which is grass-fed, which ate on those green and all those things. The other thing is exercise. Get moving, okay? The other piece is having healthy supplements, things that really soak in. In fact, I have a really good one for an anti-inflammatory. My C125, my CA125, most people walk around about less than 35. Mine was less than 7.
Really?
And that's epic. And for somebody who's had cancer, when I had cancer, it was 114, just to give you an idea. So now it's -7, less than 7. And then the other thing is mental health. Okay, this idea of having a way to express those things that can be toxic inside of us, not holding anger, not holding resentment, some things like that, and then spiritual health. So we're premised on these things that are preventative in nature. And so I'm president of the board right now. Barron is the executive director, and we have Dr. Andrew Isaacson on our team, and we have Jess as well, and Mitch Graff from the Volcanoes, the president of the Volcanoes, and Laura are part of our board right now. And so what we do is we do seminars, and the seminars touch on those five things. And I think you've been involved,
right,
if I'm not mistaken, right? Because
right?
We hate cancer, and we are kicking cancer in the booty. And that's the idea. We always say kicking cancer on the asphalt when we're running, kicking cancer in the ballpark when we're at this ball, and we're kicking cancer just about every place we can.
You know, when you get the, I don't even like to say the word cancer, I call it the C word.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get the C word, it's scary.
It is.
Because
scary.
When I first got it in 97, I had lost my mom and my dad, both to cancer. And so when they say, well, it looks like you got a kidney that's got cancer inside, the first thing you think of is, I'm going to die.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that point, I was a younger father, and my son was, you know, it was really kind of bizarre because when my dad died, I was 7 years old. My dad was 35 when he died.
Oh.
Okay. When they told me I had cancer, I was 35.
No.
My son was 7.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was a rough year just because.
Yeah.
When they say you've got the C words, it's not an automatic death sentence.
No.
People can beat it.
You can.
I beat it.
Yeah.
You beat it. They can beat it.
The research says this. If you put blood drop underneath a microscope of somebody who believes that they can beat it, and you put one under a microscope of somebody who doesn't, who believes they're going to die of cancer, the T and B fighting cells that create healing are greater in those people who believe they can beat it. Isn't that great? I mean, they actually have an empirical difference.
Yeah.
And they have evidence to show that it's longitudinal as well, which is amazing.
So where does this kicking cancer's backside, where do you want to go with this? We've only got less than 2 minutes left here, so where do you want to go with
this thing? I think if you want to get a hold of Barron or anybody on the team, it's kickingcancer.org and kicking-cancer.org, okay? And if you want to get a hold of any one of us, you can call at 503-339-5225, and I can direct you to the next seminar. Also, you can get a hold of the website, like I said, and see what the seminars are coming up. And they're usually a low cost or free. We also have a Centurion race coming up this summer, and we have over 600 military men that are going to be part of it now.
Nice.
Jess has gone out there and kicked some boot.
Yeah.
It's awesome. We're kicking cancer.
Barron likes to roll around in the mud.
He's a mudder.
He just likes to come in. He comes in here every couple of months and we do a show, and he's, you know,
he's
I told him,
guy.
I said, Barron, least you could do is take a shower. You're covered with mud.
I know.
But he's just a...
I want to do a quick plug for our breakfast with a Connections 365 before we go, too. And it's going to be April 14th. And I'm looking for people to sponsor tables and to bring 8 people to the table to come and hear what we do with the therapeutic foster care. I'd really like to encourage that. So if you want to connect, you can go to connections365.org. Everything on there under events. Yeah. And the Hope Crest is HopeCrestShelter2Home.com. HopeCrestShelter2Home.com.
All right. Faye, if someone wants to get in touch with you, is there a way they can get in touch with you a real easy way?
Yeah, 503-339-5225 or Facebook me, Faye DeMeyer. And it goes right to my Facebook. And just private message me and let me know what you're connecting about. People say you're involved in a lot of stuff. You're all over the place, Faye. And I go, because Salem's all over me. I'm all over it.
Yeah, that a girl. Would you do me a favor? I mean, you're a sweetheart, and I would love to have you come out. Would you come back and chat with us again? I've got 100 more questions I can ask you here.
I'd love it.
And
I'd love
to have you back. Super and again, if you would like to get a hold of Faye, that number is 503-399-5225.
333-9-5225.
All righty. Faye, you take care, and we'll chat later.
It's been fun. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. Good show.
Bye, everybody.